And we're holding on Samach Beis Amud Aleph, the 8 lines from the top. We actually kind of, we stopped actually sort of in the middle of the discussion. We were discussing, then the Mishnah had mentioned the machlokas of the mayor and Chanina ben Gamliel about whether you need Tnai Kofel or not. When you make the condition, do you have to repeat that if A, then B, and if not A, then not B, or something to that effect. And we went back and forth on a number of places where we find the Torah itself mentioned, there were places where the Torah itself repeats the positive and the negative, and we had to explain how Rav Chanina ben Gamliel would understand those sukkim. The last one was the other way around. We were saying that when it comes to the Sota, the Torah only mentions only mentions one side of it. That if you're innocent of the accusation, then he naki, then you will be cleansed of the you'll be free of any guilt and any punishment. How about a coincident mayor? So we said the fact that the Torah uses the word hinaki, which can be darshan, as if it said chinaki, you'll be strangled by the meisota, that there's a positive and a negative implied. And in fact, Torah says not just implied, the Kohen actually tells her both of them. So that's where we left off. Bishlema let a mayor. So now we can ask the other way around. Okay, so we can understand that according to the mayor, heinrichtiv hinaki. That is why, according to him, the Torah had to use the expression hinaki, which is an expression that can be darshan as if it said chinaki. Or, as we said yesterday, the Sfat Emes wants to say it's not even so much the fact that hinaki can be darshan as chinaki. The very fact that you're saying hinaki, you have to be cleansed from it, implies that there is something that you'll be guilty of and something that you'll be punished with if you are guilty of the Avera. El Rav Chanina ben Gamliel Lomali. According to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, why does the Torah have to use the expression hinoki? Rashi says, for example, of the Torah said tichi, you'll live, or some other lashon like that unequivocally means something good. Why
he doesn't believe in the negative?
He says you don't need. He says you don't need Tnai Kofel. He says that once you say one, you can infer the other one from it. So according to him, why did the Torah use a word like hinoki, which itself is sort of equivocal?
Well, negative and neutral.
Well, no, we're saying hinaki in and of itself is positive, but it can also be darshan in a negative way. It can be darshan as chinaki. But according to him, why? Let it just use an expression that only means positive, and we'll infer the negative from it. The answer is, it's drich. Still, according to him, we need it. Because otherwise, you might think that it means, if this other guy didn't have relations with you, then you'll be clean. If he did, loy hinaki, you won't be cleansed, loy hinaki, but you won't be strangled either. Eli Surah Ba'alma, there'll have been an isser that was done, but not necessarily that there's going to be any particular consequences.
Is he saying that he doesn't believe in the Chenek in this case?
No, he's not. We have to, according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, the Pasuk had to use the word hinaki in order to imply hinaki, because otherwise if we use an expression like tichyi, like for example, like Rashi suggests, then you could mistakenly understand it to mean that if she's guilty of the Aveda, then okay, there won't be any reward, she won't be cleansed of it, but on the other hand, there won't be any strangulation, there won't be any punishment either. There'll have been an issur done. And okay, before Shem Sam, what are you talking about? What's the whole point of the main site there is to test her.
Yeah.
Fine, but they talk about it. Yeah, I mean, we talked about various cases in Sota where she's not supposed to drink the Sota water, for example, if her husband is guilty of Avedis involving forbidden relations or whatever. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. But you might think, but then he's just saying, okay, you know, you'll drink the water anyway, and even if it's not going to actually have the total effect, because your husband, for example, is guilty of these Avedis, nevertheless, you know, we'll still administer it to you anyway. And Mashmalan, that is why the Pasuk had to phrase it the way it does, to imply that, no, you can only administer it to her if there's going to be the possibility of either hinaki or chinaki. If there's not v'nikra ishma'avin, for example, if the husband is not free of these types of avedas himself, then there's not going to be any way. As we learned at the end of Sota, that's why eventually there was a vassal giving the Sota water, because promiscuity was getting to be rampant. So that is what the Pasuk tells us by using the word hina.
Means that it's not an alternative.
That it's not, there's no alternative of nothing. It's one or the other, yeah. Now let's try another one, according to the mayor. We have a pasuk that says, as far as the paradrama, who yischata boy by yom hashlishi or by yom hashviyit, or a person who is a tummy mess needs to be cleansed with it on the third day and on the seventh day, then he will be tahor. The lo yischata boy, and then the pasuk continues, if he's not sprinkled with it on the third and seventh day, lo yitar, then he won't be tahor. So according to the mayor, we understand why the Torah had to phrase it that way, because again, you need both. El Rav Chanina ben Gamliel Lomel. The Yichon Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. Why does he need to say that? Just say that if you sprinkle both at day three and day seven, then you're good, and that's it. We'll infer the reverse. Now Tosfos asked the question. I mean, so why if I care, you could ask. According to the mayor, you have most mitzvahs in the Torah. There are most mitzvahs for other cases of Tumah V'Tahara, for example. The Torah just says, when a person is Tomei, for example, in many places, it just says he goes to the mikvah, but Rachas Mamayim V'Tahara. It doesn't say, and if he doesn't go to the mikvah, then he won't be Tahara. So what's the Torah says, the difference is, in those places, it's phrased in the form of a mitzvah. So obviously, if you don't do the mitzvah, you're not going to have the results of the mitzvah.
Here it's not as a punishment.
We're not talking about punishments per se. Here we're talking about when it says who yitzchatabai, it's not phrased in the form of a mitzvah. He must be cleansed of it. The Torah is phrasing it sort of in the form of a conditional. If he is cleansed with it, if he sprinkled with it on the third and the seventh day yitzhar, so then if we went to the mayor, we understand why he had to give us the converse of it. Whereas when it comes to other mitzvahs, again, even Rav Meir would not say you have to have the converse, because, yeah, I mean, in those cases, the Torah is explicitly telling us you have to do something, or you're not allowed to do something, so then it's obvious that, it's obvious what happens in the case of the converse. The answer is Yitzriach. We need it. Because otherwise you would think like this. The proper way to do the mitzvah of Hazah is the third day and the seventh day. But let's say your person was only sprinkled on one of those 2 days, Ovad, you would think maybe b'dievet it's okay. In other words, if it just said who yischatabai by yom shlishi or by yom shvi, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel could argue, you might say, that means that's the right way to do it. The right way to do it is both of them. The right way to do it is both of them. Fine. But if you only did one or the other, good enough.
No. Good enough meaning?
Good enough meaning your tar. Your tar. Kamash Malan, therefore, the Pasuk needs to tell us that not. Specifically, if he is not sprinkled on the third and the seventh day, then he will not be Tahar, meaning you need both. The Gemara goes then with a few Pesukim later, the Pasuk says, fine, according to that then, a few Pesukim later, the Torah repeats again, that the Tahar person should sprinkle on the Tahar person on the third day and on the seventh day. Once we already had in the previous pasuk establishing that, according to both Rav Meir and Rav Chanina ben Gamliel's understanding of the pasuk, it means it has to be the third and the seventh. Because no other than what we need the second pasuk. Yeah. The answer is it. Still, we need it. Fine. You could argue that the Torah means it can't be any earlier than the third day. It can't be, for example, the second day. It can't be earlier than the seventh. The second time can't be any earlier than the seventh day. It can't be the sixth day, for example. Become a ma'if you may time. Because then you would be reducing the number of days that it takes for the Tahara process. The Torah is saying it has to be at least no earlier than the third day and no earlier than the second day. Avo hecha de avad b'shlishi u'b'shmini. What would happen, for example, if somebody were to get sprinkled on the third day and the eighth day, become mafish b'mei Tahara, where then on the face of it he is increasing the number of days it takes for him to become Tahara. Eima shafir dami. You would think then the Torah might be implying that that's okay. Kamash Malon, that is why the Pasuk repeats it again and says that Behizah Atar Alatama, Dafka Bayena Shlishi or Bayena Shvi.
One is Bayena Shlishi,
can't be early, can't be late. Right. Now, Rashi does point out both of them can be late in the sense that, for example, you don't have to be, if a person became Tomei on a Tuesday, for example, doesn't mean that they must get sprinkled Dafka on Thursday, which is the third day from their Toma, and then 4 days later on Monday. If they want to wait, and let's say have their first sprinkling next week Sunday, or actually Rashi's example is on the fourth day. So let's say he wants to get sprinkled the first time on Friday and the next day on Tuesday. As long as they're 4 days apart, then it's fine. So fine, we're saying you're not counting the 7 days from the day he became Tomei. You're counting from the next day or the day after that or what have you. The point is, though, that you must have 4 days between the first sprinkling and the second sprinkling. No more, no less.
Something from?
That's the thing. It has to be. The two rules Rashi is saying are, you have to have the two sprinklings have to be 4 days apart, no more, no less. And the first one has to be 3 days or more after the Torah. It cannot be any earlier than the third day. Once you do that, then yeah, it could be the fourth and eighth, it could be the fifth and ninth, whatever.
The first one cannot be earlier than three days.
And the second one
can be
later than the third day. And the second one has to be exactly 4 days after the first one. Which, by the way, for example, in Yuma, the Gemara tells us that for that reason, the Kohen Gadol, since he needs to be sprinkled with the Parah Adruma water every day of the 7 days before Yom Kippur, they would separate him out, not for Yom Kippur, actually. Yom Kippur could be any days of the week, so you have no choice. Sorry, but the Parah Adruma, rather, the mission tells us in Parah. That's because he had to be sprinkled with Parah Adruma water every one of the days in case, to be on the safe side, in case any one of the days could be the third day and the seventh day. The only day they didn't have to sprinkle him is the fourth day, because there's no way the fourth day from when they separated him cannot be cannot be either one. If it's the third, it wouldn't matter, because 4 days later is going to be the eighth day. He's already going to have done Parah Adruma. And the fourth day can't be, this fourth day can't possibly be 7 days since he originally became Tomei, because he didn't have a sprinkling 4 days before. Therefore, they would separate him for the purpose of the Parah Adruma on Wednesday. Since you can't sprinkle Parah Adruma water on Shabbos, this way the fourth day would come out on Shabbos, and this way you can sprinkle them every other day. By the way, the Rambam has a different shit on this. The Rambam holds that you can do the third or the eighth day. The Rambam says there's not a problem with two sprinklings being five or six or whatever it is days apart. And the Ravid asks, what are you talking about? What are you doing with our Gemara? What are you doing with our Gemara? But different Mefoshim on the Rambam talk about different possibilities. It may be that the Rambam had a different Dirsa here in the Gemara, or it may be that the Rambam is relying not on our Gemara, but rather on something that we find in Sikta and Yalkut Shimoni and whatever, that implies that that implies that you can have them more than 4 days apart. The Peda is that the first one can't be any earlier than the third day, and the second one can't be any less than 4 days after the first one, but it could be more. That's what I'm saying.
It could be not earlier than the fourth day after the first one.
Right. So once you have one on the third day, the second one cannot be earlier than the seventh, but it could be the eighth, the ninth, et cetera.
That's
how that I'm asking. So by default, that's how long. It's the only Rishon HaPasuk that I'm saying there. Okay. Then the Pasuk finishes off the Chitei by Yom HaShvi. The Pasuk finishes off that the Tahor person cleanses him on the seventh day, Lomeli. So what do we need to add that for? What is that adding? The answer is Iftar. Fine, but you would think that maybe this whole rule that you need doctor the third and doctor the seventh day and they have to be doctor 4 days apart, et cetera, is maybe only as far as eating kodshim or going into the Beis Hamikdash or whatever. Avol truma, but you would think maybe as far as truma, but chadnami sagya. Maybe for truma, either the third or the seventh is enough. Maybe you don't doctor need both. Kamash malam, that is why the Torah needs to repeat the chitei bei mashvi, that until the seventh day, until the second sprinkling, he is not fully tahor. So first the Torah is telling us as far as Kodshim that it must be this way, and then by adding the Chitei Be'er Shvi means for Truma as well. Yeah. Mishnah says, a Mekadosh HaTeisha, a man is Mekadosh a woman, but Omer, and he says, Kisavra HaYusi Shei Kehenet, I thought that she was a Kehenet, V'Harei Leviyah, and it turns out that she's a Bas Levi. Leviyah V'Harei Kehenet, so the other way around, I thought she was a Bas Levi, it turns out she's a Bas Kohen. Ania V'Harei Yashira, I thought she was poor, it turns out she's rich. Ashira V'Harei Ania. In all those cases, she is Mekodesh, Mifnei Shalohit Atru, because she did not mislead him. She didn't say, I'm a Bas Toyin or Bas Levi or what have you. He thought, he assumed. Famous expression that everybody says, you know what happens when you assume. So this is what happens. Actually, there is an interesting thing that comes with this, though, on the face of it. I mean, okay, he assumed, and it turns out he assumed wrongly. But still, he wouldn't have been Mekodesh if he had known. So actually, the Ram talks about the question, a related question, which is, why is this Mishnah over here anyway? We had a Mishnah in the previous Perek that described the case where he said, I'm a Kohen, and it turns out he's a Levi, etc., and he said, no good. Shouldn't this Mishnah have been juxtaposed with that one? Why do we have 12 blot later? He says, two possibilities.
Who said that?
The Ram asked the question. And by answering that, also answers the question, but his answers with that also answer the question of what happened, the fact that after all, he did have it in mind. One is that both of his answers are that it's following on the previous Mishnah with the Machlokas of Reb Meir and Reb Chanina ben Antichus. We would say like this. One way of looking at it is Reb Meir is saying that you need a Tnai Kohl, but only if you're making a Tnai. In this case, you're not necessarily making a Tnai. You're being the Kaddish on a certain understanding. So then if you had spoken out that assumption, let's say, okay, then you could talk about whether it's valid or not, like this, where you just had it in his mind, then that you don't need a tonight couple, you don't need a tonight couple for it. You don't need, you, no, sorry, that's what it is. It's not a question of whether he spoke it or not. You don't need a tonight couple because it's not a question of amanah. So had he said, I'm the Kaddish you, not even amanah, because that's what amanah would be a tonight. If he had said, you're a Bas Koyan, then I want to be Mekadosh you. Then if it turns out that she wasn't, then even if there's not a Tanai Tofu, we would say Inim Kadesh. So like this, where nothing was actually said, he just assumed it. That's one answer of the Ram. Then a different answer, he says, is that Mishnah over here is telling us, even according to the Chanina ben Antigonus, who says that we don't need Tanai Tofu, he does agree that it has to be said. Like this in the Mishnah, where he didn't even say anything, he just assumed it, then for sure it doesn't matter. It's not considered a Tanai at all, and therefore it doesn't prevent the tradition from being offensive.
So the reason why we didn't learn it on the day
is because it's related to the concept of Tanayim in the previous Mishnah, but either it's not, in one way or another, it's not really a Tanai, therefore according to the Meir, you don't need a Tanai couple for it to have possibly been valid, and according to the Chananim and Gamliel, for sure you don't, but it has to have at least been some kind of Tanai, and it wasn't. But therefore, that's why this Mishnah is over here, and that's why, even though he may not have wanted to be Mekadosher had he known she wasn't a Bas Kohen, fine. But the fact is, he didn't express it in the right way, and therefore, there wasn't even a Gilui Das, and therefore, it doesn't matter. Mishnah continues. A man says to a woman, "You are mekudesh to me after I become a ger." So he's a goy telling her that I'm giving you a pruta now, and after I become a ger, the kedushin should take effect. Or after you become a geras, he's an eved. He says after I'm freed, and then I'm able to marry a Bas Yisrael. Or after you're freed for being a shifter of manish. Yeah. What?
Yeah, she cannot be.
Yeah. What? La'acha shiyom with violet. So he says, I'm mekadesh you now for it to take effect after your husband dies. So he says to a married woman. Or la'acha shatomos achoitech. Or he says he's married to her sister at this point, where therefore she's an heir to him as long as her sister, his wife, is alive, even if he divorces her. So he says, I'm mekadesh you now, and it'll take effect after your sister dies. Or la'acha shiyachlis lichivamet. Or after your yavam gives you chalitza. Now that one is different than all the other ones, because all the other ones kedushin ataka not tofus. Yuvama with Chalitza, we actually had a machlokas in Yuvamas, whether if somebody is Makadosh Yuvama before Chalitza, whether it's Tophis or not. Rashi says that our Mishnah evidently is going according to the opinion that says that it's not Tophis. That was the opinion. I think it was. Well, Rabbi Akiva says B'chalal that in Kedushin Tophis is B'chai V'lava. But we said, never mind Rabbi Akiva. We said, even according to everybody else, there is a reason to say we learned in Kedushin, we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel, not Kedushin, in Yuvamas, we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel over there about when it says, Loisiyah, Eishas HaMeis HaChutzal, Loishasar, doesn't mean that you're not able to be the Kaddish or Loisiyah, there can't be Havaya, or does it not mean that? Does it just mean that there's a lot? So our Mishnah would be going according to the opinion that it's Taka not Tophis. Whereas if we say that it is Tophis, then that's different than all the other cases, and then such Kedushin could be effective. Or actually, there's a possibility that the Rishonim talk about it might be Sophic Kedushin, actually, given that the Sophic that we said over there that Shmuel had, whether Kedushin are Tophis by Yavama or not. Anyway.
Why do we need all these cases when anything a goy says,
we'll see in the Gemara that there's a difference between a Ger and a Meshuchra for this purpose. So wait.
And
a Meshuchra, an Eved or Shifuch Nanis, that was freed, yeah. Similarly, if somebody tells his friend, if your wife gives birth to a girl, then I want to be Mekadosh that girl for myself, and you'll accept the Kedushin on her behalf. And a Mekadosh, then also she's not Mekadosh, because she, all of these cases is Dabar Shalai Bala Ova. All these cases, in the case of a Goy, he's not yet a Yid, therefore Kedushin on is not a Matzios, that's able to be Tophis. Same thing over here, the girl doesn't exist in the world yet.
You would say the same if she's pregnant?
Well, the Mishnah continues. So this part over here is in parenthesis. And there are a number of Mephoshim who say we shouldn't be Goyless it in the Mishnah, because we're actually going to have in the Gemara that Rav Chanina says basically the same thing. So therefore, there's an argument to say that it doesn't belong in the Mishnah, that it's a memra from the Amora of Chanina. However, the Rambam is going to sit over here and Rafoshim talk about why the Rambam would hold that the Mishnah says it, and then Chanina has to repeat it. We'll see when we get to it. Anyway. So imhoisa eshes chaveru muberes. What if his wife is currently pregnant, rehuko ubra, and we can already recognize that she's pregnant. She's already 3 months or more into the pregnancy, so we know already she's pregnant. Dvarav kayamin. Then what he said has validity, because then that baby, to a certain extent, already exists. And therefore, being yold in the keva, therefore, if she does give birth to a girl, mekodeshes, then yes, she is mekodesh on that baby.
Let me ask you a question. If we do an ultrasound and we find out it's a girl before she delivers.
Okay, so there are Mephoshim who point out that Amnam uses an expression. There are Mephoshim who learn that it would mean even while she's in the womb, she's ready for Kiddush. However, the Rambam's expression is that a father has the ability to accept Kiddush on his daughter's behalf from when she's born until she becomes a Begeret, which implies but not before she's born yet. because after all, to a certain extent, she's still not fully a Davar Shebal Olam. Besides, I mean, given the fact that where do we know b'chol a father has the ability to mekadesh his daughter? It's from Zera Tzakosav, as Biti Nafati Leishazet. That's taking place after she's born. You can't necessarily generalize from that to before she's born. So the Gemara is not going to focus.
One second. If she says it during the time she's pregnant, when she's born, she look at it.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. Like, if Huka Ubra, as long as he said it, once you already know that she's pregnant, then yes. So the Gemara is not going to focus on the first couple of lines of the Mishnah about the Kisavar or Yisbi, because that's fairly straightforward, and we already dealt with that whole matter of Tos and whatever in the previous pair. So the Gemara is going to focus on the second and third parts of the Mishnah, the parts about La'achashes, Gairashes, Gairi, La'achashes, Gairi, etc. The Gemara starts off. It's non-helpful. We learn in a Mishnah, where is this, in Trumas, Ein Tomin Min Atolo Shalom Achover, you cannot take Truma from produce that's already been picked and harvested on behalf of produce that has not yet been picked. The imtara main truma of the truma, and if you do, it's not considered truma. So Rashi points out the reason is because produce that's still attached to the ground is not yet chayiv in truma. It only becomes chayiv in truma after it's picked. Tosfos discusses that a little bit, and Tosfos says actually not really. Even after it's picked, it's not really chayiv in truma yet until Gemay Malacha is done. In the case of grain, as we talked about, the meruah, you pile it up and smooth out the sides. In the case of various other produce, it's whatever. Be that as it may, the point is, however you look at it, according to Rashi, according to Tosfos, the point is that the tolosh is something that's already chayiv in truma. The mechuber is something that's not yet. So you can't do that. The imtarim, truma to truma. And if you did, then your truma is not considered truma. And Rashi says actually that means we don't even say like cases that we had a few blocks ago that it's truma v'yachs of yitzra, that it is considered truma, but you still have to take truma again. Here we consider it's not truma at all. It's 100% tevel, and therefore you can take other produce and give truma on behalf of it, and it'll become holy. The Kohen should have to return it because it's not truma.
You can take other produce and have it in mind.
And have it in mind that you're doing for this. You're not supposed to, because you're supposed to do minam mukav, but b'diavad like this you can, and then it'll be considered kohen. Now, b'minei Rav Asi min Rav Yechanan. So now Rav Asi asks Rav Yechanan based on this. Omar, what if the person says, Peres arugazu tzlushim yo truma, Peres arugazu mechoborim? What if he says, the fruit in this plot of land in the field, which are harvested, should be truma on behalf of the ones that are still attached to the ground, which fine, the Mishnah told us that's no good. Or the other way around, but the key thing is, the difference from how it is in the Mishnah, is he adds the word lichshi yitolshu, that this will be in effect when they are picked. So he's saying, right now I have this plot that has not yet been picked, and this one that is. I want to designate this as truma on behalf of this, but only to take effect when I actually pick this. The nifloshu, and now it was picked. Mahu, what would be the din? So if it had not been picked yet, we'd say it's not considered truma. But if once now it's picked, so now both of them are picked.
Would it be something?
That's the question. Do you consider that? Yeah. Amalai, so Rabbi Yechanan answers him. Kol shebiyodei lav kamechosa ma'itadam. Where you have that the thing that's missing, that has not yet been done, is something in your capability to do, then that's not considered mechutz maisa. It's not considered that the action has not been done. Meaning, yes, since you have the ability anytime you want to go pick the produce from that plot, and then it will be chayiv in truma at that point, or according to Tosfos, you have to go process it, whatever. The point is, you can make it chayiv in truma. Therefore, even now, yes, you have the ability to make such a declaration in advance, and it will take effect when you actually do that night.
As long as you keep the capability of being...
As long as it's something that you yourself would be capable of doing without anybody else's involvement. Okay, so now comes the connection to our Mishnah. That of Asi Asher Birchanan, and how does that fit with our Mishnah? All these cases, we said she's not Mekodesh. So, the question is, Bishlema Kulu La Biyodah. Fine, most of the things in the Mishnah are not Biyodah. The Eved or the Shivcha, it's not in their hands, they don't have the capability of unilaterally becoming free. With after your sister dies or after your husband dies, it's also not the other. Ella Ger, Habi Biyado, Bechora Ger, it's in him. Yeah, on the face of it. All he has to do is he has to accept mitzvahs and then get a mila and get tefillah. It's in his capability to do. The answer is no. Ger nami la biyado. No, Ger is also not something that he can unilaterally do. The Amr of Kiyav, Amr of Abba, Amr of Yechnan, Ger started Shloisha. Actually, a Ger cannot become a Ger on his own. In private,
right.
He requires a base din of three to be involved. We learned in Yevamos when we had the whole sugya. The Bris is we learned in Yevamos that if he doesn't have Mila Tzvila, it's Makir. Yeah.
So this also you could just
fine, but okay, at least no, well, okay. That's a good point actually, because after all, a ger does a mila, it's not considered a mila. But fine, you can have a case, for example, where he's already gemalus and really just needs a tough zambris. You can have be talking about a woman who doesn't need mila at all. Yeah. So in those senses, if there's just a tefillah and a couple of mitzvahs, Rav Asi is asking that it's biyada, and Rav Yechanan is telling him it's not biyada. Because actually, you see that ger tzorich shloisha. A ger needs three Yisraelim who have to be supervising the tovling. And inform him of the Kabbalah mitzvah. That's how Rashi says. Rashi says they need both. You need the Shloisha to be there for both. They need to be the ones who are telling him about the mitzvah, and he formally accepts them on himself. And they also need to be there for the Tevila. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that actually you do need three to have him do the Kabbalah mitzvah. When it comes to the Tevila, it's good enough to have one, Tosfos says. And by the way, Tosfos Riyad Zakin adds over here, we're not just talking about any old three people. We're talking about it has to be three people who are capable of functioning as a base din. People who know the halacha. Tamid Chachamim royim lahayra is the expression. Lahidia is the expression he uses. Tamid Chachamim who are capable, who have the ability to inform him of what mitzvahs involve. So therefore, it's not necessarily something that you can find right there on the spot. My timer. Now, why is that? It needs to be mishpat k'sivei k'din, because the pasuk uses the expression mishpat in connection with a ger. Rashi brings the pasuk mishpat echad yilachem tager te'ezra from the end of Parashas Emor. Different other mafarshim talk about different other psukim that also mention the word mishpat in connection with a ger. Mishpat echad yilachem from Parashas Shlach. Or the one that Rashi brings is mishpat echad yilachem tager te'ezra yiyeh. That's the pasuk from the end of Parashas Emor. Kager ka ezrachia. The ger is just like the ezra, just like the native-born Jewish citizen. So we see that the Torah uses the word mishpatala in connection with a ger, and therefore it has to be kedin. Therefore, it has to be like a din Torah. Din Torah requires three dayanim. So does this.
And they have to be dayanim. They have to be perskei.
Well, they have to be people who are capable of knowing the halach. Actually, Tosfos asked an interesting question, which we also discussed a bit in Yevamos. On the face of it, then, why shouldn't we say that they need to be mumchin, that they need to have smicha? Tosfos says because there's a pasuk that says l'doreh teichem, which implies that even in a time where there's not mumchin, in all times there has to be the capability of accepting gerim. So even when there's not smuchim ish m'piyish.
From
the doreh teichem. There's a different place, and when we learned about this in Yevamos, we discussed that. I think it was either Tosfos over there or some other Rishonim who said a different. I think it was Tosfos over there who said a different reason that nowadays, when a Beis Din who are not Smuchim supervise the Geirus, they're doing it on behalf of the Bati Dinim of former times who had Smicha. They've been empowered by them, even though they're not Smicha Ish M'Piyish, but they've been empowered by them to be able to accept it.
Only for that purpose.
Only for that purpose, yeah. Anyway, therefore, me, Emadim is Dakukalei Hanitwasa. Given that you need three people who are actual Tamar Chachamim, who says that they're going to want to be involved in making him a ger? So therefore, it can't be considered the other, as opposed to taking Truma, where all you need to do is go over to the plot over there and start picking. So therefore, it's not a stira. Yes, in our Mishnah, when the goy says to a woman, "I'm mekadesh you, I want to be mekadesh you," that it should take effect after I become a ger. That's considered mechus maisa because he's not capable of becoming a ger unilaterally. Maskefor of Abba b'memel. So now Rav Abba b'memel asks on that. Elamayata. Well, by that logic, if you're saying that it just depends on whether it's something that he can do unilaterally or whether it requires somebody else's involvement. What if somebody gives a prutah to his shifcha? Shivchanit. Ba'amar, and he says to her, Harei at Mekudesh, he says, Shachar, you're Mekudesh to me with this after I free you. Would you argue that that's considered Kiddushin? Because B'yada, he's free her whenever he wants.
Would you argue that it's Kiddushin?
Well, that's the question. L'chora, based on our Mishnah, the same way as in our Mishnah, when a man says to a Shifcha Knanit, La'acha Shetashtachri, we're saying that's not. We would assume the same thing is true when the other in himself says, La'acha Shetashtachri. But if you're saying that it's just a difference of whether it's B'yada or not, then there, you should be making that distinction, and we don't seem to. Now, Tosfos brings up the point, actually. That's the question. That's the question. Now, Tosfos, the question is that it's in his capability, on the face of it, to make her meshuchra, to free her. He doesn't require anybody else for that. So therefore, why don't we consider it biyodeh? Why don't we consider it not mechosa maizeh? And yes, if he gives her a mechosa for that purpose, then yeah, as soon as he frees her, she'll be mekodesh. Like I said, Tosfos discusses the issue that what about, don't you need a base din of three for the Eved Shichru as well? And Tosfos says that actually no. Tosfos learns, based on the Gemara and Yevamos over there, that no, actually, since he accepted mitzvahs beforehand, since the Eved or Shichra has to anyway accept mitzvahs to begin with, when they become an Eved Knani or Shichra Knani, they have to accept some of the mitzvahs that women are chayav in. Therefore, they don't need another three now, they don't need another base of three now for Kabbalah to mitzvahs when they're toiling at the end.
Otherwise, they should.
Otherwise, because based on our Gemara, that's why the Gemara doesn't bring up that point. That said, though, the Rambam says that you do, and therefore, Makor should discuss how the Rambam exactly would deal with our Gemara. Anyway. The point is, though, it's not Kiddushin. Also, incidentally, there's an interesting point also that a couple of Achronim bring up. How are you able to give a shifra, a pruta, to be Mekadosh anyway? As soon as you give her the pruta, you own the pruta. How are you giving it to her at Kiddushin anyhow? That, for that reason alone, it shouldn't be good.
But can't you have in mind that this time she bought it for herself?
If somebody else gives it to her, that's a possibility.
If you're you
don't have the ability to say that to give her her own yacht. Somebody else, yeah, we learned earlier in the Sefta that a person can give, and somebody else, a third party, can give an Eved something, amanas, that your husband, that you're, but he himself, Lachor or not.
To free her completely.
Fine, but he hasn't yet been Meshachar.
No,
while she's still a Shifcha.
Right,
exactly. Well, it seems that she doesn't know.
And he cannot say, I'm giving you a pruta for you not to.
Apparently not. Apparently not, because it's he himself involved with you. There's no
but
third party.
Point.
No, but that's the point. So they give a couple of answers. The Hamakna, I think, gives an answer, I think, that first of all, it doesn't necessarily have to be as Mekadosher with a pruta. Okay, the Mishnah, the Gemara over here was mentioning the case of a pruta. We're going to have some cases where he gives her something intangible as Kiddushin. As something that where the hanav of it is worth a shavu prota, and therefore that works. So over here, he could be doing something for her that's worth a shavu prota.
So if it's not tangible, it works. If it's tangible, it doesn't work.
If it's tangible, it doesn't work because she doesn't have a yad to acquire it. But if he has hanav, she's a human being. She has hanav. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't understand if it's involved. Has the intent to give it to her to keep.
Fine, but because she herself is his possession, is his shifcha, therefore he doesn't have the ability to give it to her amanas that you don't have, I don't have the shifcha.
Even if
somebody else could do that. So he could have that somebody else could be giving her a prusa on his behalf. But yeah. Okay. Anyway. Okay, the Gemara says, Hachi Hashta. Fine. How do you think to compare those two cases? Hosam, in the case of a Shivcha, the problem is Me'ikra Behema Hashta Da'at Acheret. Originally, the Shivcha is compared to a Behema in the same Amadim al Chamer, as we'll learn later on in the Perek, that Avodim are compared to a Chamer. Hashta Da'at Acheret. When she becomes free, she has a new Das. She now becomes a Bat Yisrael, and she's considered to be a full-fledged Adam and have Das. Now, some Mepharshim argue that you could say the same thing as far as a ger. You could argue the same thing, that beforehand he's like a behemah, and now he's not. Other Mepharshim say that no. A ger, for example, we learned in Yevamos, a ger has yichus, he's considered that his father is considered his father in halacha, whereas with avadim not. So therefore, you can't use this answer. You have to use the answer that we used before, that a ger can't do it unilaterally. Okay. Okay, the Gemara asks, "Elohadu Amar Rav Oshia." Fine. What about this that Rav Oshia says? Hanosin pruta l'ishto. A case if somebody gives a pruta to his wife. He says, with this, I'm being mekadesh you after I divorce her. So he says, right now we're married. I'm going to be divorcing you, but I'm giving you ahead of time this pruta now that should take effect the kedushin that you'll be re-mekadesh to me after the divorce. Hey, no mekadesh. No, the get itself is Chris. It's fine. That's
give you a pruta that it will.
And, well, we're saying hey, no mekadesh. We're saying she's not mekadesh. So yeah. He's not making the get conditional on her accepting the kedushin again afterwards.
Right.
He's just saying that's it. But ain't a kedushin. Hachinam the Rav Yechon da'av kedushin. What would you argue according to Rav Yechon and such a thing would be valid kedushin since it's biyadei after all? He has biyadei to give her the get. Again, the answer is he'd be biyadei the garusha, biyadei the kadusha. Fine, okay. He has the ability to be mekadesher. He doesn't have the ability to be mekadesher though. She could always after the kedushin. She's her own person. She could refuse the kedushin. So therefore, you can't argue that's fully biyadei. As opposed to the case of Truma, where it is. In that case, the Gemara says, Kifsha deboyer of Oshia. In that case, based on this answer that we just said, shouldn't we be able to answer a question of Rav Oshia? Now, many Mephoshim say that the Rav Oshia that we're going to quote now is different than the Rebbe Oshia that we quoted a few lines ago. So therefore, the Gemara is not going to say that based on how we explain him, we can explain his own Shitta, or words to that effect, because they're actually two different amaros. So the boy Rabbi Oshia had no such state purpose later. Suppose a man gives two purpose to a woman. He says, one of them, I want to be mekadesh with you today. The other one, I want you to be after the kedushin that I gave you, which I'm going to be chal now, I plan to divorce you. After that, I'm giving you another purpose in advance now that after that kedushin, I want to be mekadesh you again.
She's a kind of more.
Obviously not, but we're not talking about that. Okay. Tip should we know do I have a kedushin? Based on what we just said about the case where the man gives a prutta to his wife, shouldn't we argue by the same way that it's not kedushin? So we should be able to answer Rav Oshia's question based on our understanding of Rabbi Oshia's statement. The answer is no. Dilma kiheche the tapsi kedushin hashta tapsi namel achamikan lachakam. Because you can argue there's a difference. When his wife is when she's already mekudesh to him and he's giving her a prilta and saying I want it to be effect after we get divorced, right now he doesn't have the capability of being mekadesh her at all because she's already his wife. If he gives her kedushin now and says I want to be mekareh mekudeshly, that has no effect because she's already his wife. Therefore, you could argue that therefore it's more poshut to say that in that case the prilta that'll take place after kedushin doesn't take effect either because right now it couldn't take effect, as opposed to the case of Rav Oshia's, where right now she's a penuria. Right now they're not married at all. Either the first or the second one would be capable of taking place right now. He can be mekadesh her now. Later on, after she's divorced, she will be available for kedushin again. Then you could argue that that's different, that maybe in fact both of them should work. You can't really answer that question based on the previous thing. Going back now, we started the sugya, we started the discussion by saying that Rabbi Yochanan pointed out that there is a difference between that truma, that in the case of truma, you are able to designate mechubar for tolush or tolush for mechubar because you have the case, as long as you say that it's going to take effect when I actually pick it, because you have the capability of picking at any time. Tanya Kabbalah said to Rabbi Yochanan, we learn a braisa that agrees with what Rabbi Yochanan says. Ein tomer na tolush al mechubar, it says you can't take truma from something that's tolush, from something that's already picked from the ground, ala mechubar, on something that's still attached to the ground, or vice versa. V'im toram ein truma v'truma, and if he did, then it's not truma. So far, that's the same as the Mishnah had said before. Ketzad, now what does this mean? How does this work? Oma peres arugas tolushin, yu truma, peres arugas mechubaret. If he says the peres from this plot, which have already been harvested, should be truma on behalf of the peres in this other plot, which are still attached to the ground, or the other way around, peres arugas mechubaret, yu truma, peres arugas tolushin, loya mechub. And that doesn't count for anything because one or the other of them, the one that's mechubar, it's minachayev ala pater or minapater ala chayev, and that doesn't work. Aval, but here's the key thing that the braisa adds. If he says that I want this to be in effect when I pick them, the nitlashu, and then afterwards they were indeed picked, dvarav kayam, and then what he said has validity because, again, that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. He has the other. He has the capability of picking it any time he wants. Okay. Now the braisa continues. Yes, it arcane, even more than that, Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Afilo Omer Peres Arugas at Slushin, Yira Truma, Peres Arugas and Mechaberet, Peres Arugas and Mechaberet, Yira Truma, Peres Arugas at Slushin. Even if he doesn't say Lichshi Yitol Tru, even if he doesn't say when they're harvested, but he says Lichshi Yaviu Shlish, that it should be in effect when they grow to one third of their growth. Oh, it's not. No, he mentions both. Lichshi Yaviu Shlish V'Yitolshu. Suppose that the ones that are still attached to the ground are not only they're still attached to the ground, but they're not even at one third of their growth yet. Now the din is, if you harvest them before they've reached one third of their growth, then they're not, even if you harvested them and then processed them and made a sack of them, etc., it would not be chayiv in truma and maaser. We learned it in Rosh Hashanah. We had a discussion about it. We learn it from a pasuk. But also that's called l'shloish hashanim l'shloish. We darshan as l'shlish. Classically speaking, also, I think the Rashami mentions that when the plant is not even one third of its growth yet, if you plant the seeds, they won't grow. Therefore, you can't call that tivuat zarecha. Zarecha implies something that you planted and it would be able to grow. Okay. So, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that even if not only we're talking about that the plants are still attached to the ground, therefore they're still potter from Truma. But at least you could argue then, fine, that it's the other, that you have the capability to pick them anytime you want and make them chayiv from Truma. But even if they're not one third grown yet, but you say lichshi yaviu shlish, that should take effect when they grow to one third, which is not something the other, you can't make them grow any faster. Ve'yitolshu, and he adds also when they're picked. And they grew one third, and they were then picked from the ground. Then what he said has validity.
We're not sure that it's going to grow up, it's slush.
Well, Omer Rabba. So now Rabba says on this, Loy Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Ela B'Shach. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is talking about a case where, for example, the kernels, the seeds, that have not grown to one third of their growth yet. But at this point, it's at the stage of shach. It's something which it's able to be used for hay. You could at this point harvest it. You wouldn't be able to use the grain for anything. You wouldn't be able to grow anything with it, etc. But it's grown enough that you could now harvest it and use it for hay to feed animals. That's called shach. So when it's already at that stage, then it's something that's already recognized, that the plants are already recognizable, something that has a chshivus. Therefore, you can say that. It hasn't yet grown a third. It may not, something like this, if you're picking it, it's not going to grow a third. But nevertheless, because it's already at that stage, that's good enough.
That's the condition that was stipulated to begin with. The condition stipulated initially was...
No, that's the point. In other words, he didn't actually harvest it as shaka. He could, at this point, harvest it as shaka.
Yeah,
so therefore, because now, even though it's not one-third grown yet, right, when it grows to be one-third, and then he harvests it, whether it's shaka or to actually take the seeds and try to plant them or whatever, then dvar kayamin, then what he said will have validity, because at least he said it at a time when it was at a substantial part of its growth, when it's something, when it's at shaka, yeah.
There was a great likelihood when it was shaka that it would grow to a third.
Not so much that it's a great likelihood. There actually says the expression, b'midid minkav chashuv. At that point, it's something recognizable and something chashuv. Therefore, you're able to make conditions on it. But if it's still soft, flexible plants, we'll talk about in a few lines, the next line, what the word agam means. Usually the word agam in the Gemara means like a meadow, but here we're going to say it has a different meaning. Then not, because it doesn't even have any chashivos, so you can't even say that later on, when eventually next month or 2 months from now or whatever, when it finishes growing to one-third stage, at that point your declaration of earlier at the agam stage should be effective. Even that, Rabbi says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov wouldn't say that. It's not a question of biyada or not. Rabbi is making the distinction whether it's a davar chashuv. Whether it has a chashivos that you can be saying that now, you can be making a declaration now that will have effect when it reaches a later stage. It has to at least be. Because that's the thing. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying it doesn't totally have to be biyadei. Because even if it hasn't reached one third yet, it's not biyadei to make it grow to one third now. But at least you set it at a point when it already has some chashivos, that's good enough. Rabbi Yosef Amakil Ba'agam. Rabbi Yosef says that no, even when it's at the earlier stage, at any stage, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you could even when it's still soft, very flexible plant, even before the shachas stage, you could make such a statement. Yeah, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Gemara says, "My mashma dahi agam lishna debutzlonahu." Where do we get the idea? Where do we see that the word agam means something that is sprouting forth from the ground? And it's sprouting forth, but still flexible. Amar Rav Elazar, the Amakra, because you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, it's an after of Yom Kippur morning. The pasuk is halakos kagmon rosho. The pasuk that the Navi is criticizing people over there who fast, but they don't. They're still doing averus, and they think the fast is the whole mitzvah, so that they don't realize that the important thing is to do tshuva. So the Navi says to them, what do you think the Eibishter wants from you? Halakha ka'agmon rosha? Do you think the Eibishter just wants you to bend your head like an agmon? Rashi says over there an agmon means a fish hook. The Radak says it means, like we're saying over here, a soft, flexible plant. The point is, the Navi is saying, that's not, you don't just show the outward signs of humility, show some inner trouble. Anyway, the point is, we see the agmon means something that where the top of it bends very easily. Okay, the Gemara says, "Kaman Ozla Hodatanya." Okay, so now we have what are we saying? We just quoted the Machlokas of Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov and the Chachamim as far as the grain. According to the Chachamim, you have to wait until the grain is actually at least one third grown, and before that, you cannot. If at that point you were to pick it, it would already be chayiv and truma, and therefore at that point you can start making conditions. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, depends. According to Rabba or according to Rabbi Yosef, whether you can make it at earlier stages as well. So kaman oz lahadatanya, shachat ragamim. Kaman oz lahadatanya. So we have to ask which of these tanoim. Does the following go according to Tanya that we learn in the Braisa? If a man says to his friend, "Im yod ishtecha nekeva mekudeshesli loya makum," actually it was our Mishnah, so maybe it shouldn't be the Tanya, it should be the Tanan that we learned in our Mishnah that if someone says to his friend, "If your wife gives birth to a girl, then she should be mekudesh to me loya makum," we said that doesn't count for anything. Ve'er omer Rav Chanina, and now Rav Chanina says on that, which again we had in parenthesis in the Mishnah, which is that was the reason we said why a number of Mepharshim say that we shouldn't be goyesit over here. That we shouldn't be going to say the Mishnah, rather. Lo yishanu al hashen ishtimu beres. This is only talking about if the wife is not even pregnant yet. Avol ishtimu beres. But if the wife is pregnant, dvar of kayyamin. And what he said has validity. So we have to ask, who does that go like? Kimam. Which of these tanoim does it go like? Which of these tanoim, or in the case of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, the understanding of which of the amaroim, Rabba or Rav Yosef, does this statement of Rav Chanina go according to? The answer is, Ika Rabba. You could say that it agrees with Rabba, who would say that this statement of Rav Chanina is talking according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. And by the way, that is why Mepharshim say that's one reason why the Rambam may hold that it's in the Mishnah as well as Rav Chanina is stating it, because the Mishnah may have been talking according to the Chachamim. Here we're focusing on according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. So therefore, that's different. So therefore, you can be goyesit in the Mishnah and still be goyesit over here, and it's not Rav Chanina is not just repeating what it says in the Mishnah, but rather he's talking according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Especially because in Rav Chanina's statement, he doesn't explicitly say anything about Hoko Obra. The Mishnah had mentioned Hoko Obra. Rav Chanina doesn't say anything about that. So, Ike Rabba, Kshehoko Obra, if you want to say according to Rabba's explanation of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion, then you would have to say the case would have to be talking about over here where she's pregnant and you can already visibly see that she's pregnant. Because that would be the equivalent of the Shachas stage. True, the baby is not viable yet because it's only 3 months. Fine, Shachas is not yet seeds that can be planted, but it still has chashivos already. Over here also, the woman is pregnant, so there's a certain chashivos. You can already be talking about the baby that's in there, because you know it's in there. So therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, such a thing would be valid. He could have Yosef afi shaloi hoko obra. Or if you want to go with Rabbi Yosef's statement, you could say that this statement of Rabbi Chanina would work according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, even if not hoko obra. Because again, just like he said with the plants, that even if they're at the agam stage, a very early stage, nevertheless, you can talk about that when it grows to a later stage, and I pick it, I'll use it as tshuva. The same way over here, even before you know that she's pregnant, you can still already be making such conditions.
Great.
There's a certain degree of chashivas.
Yeah. No, but that's the thing. One's RBS if you don't need a certain degree of chashivas.
You don't need.
No, that's the thing. According to Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Zman Yaakov, you don't even need that.
So you could say it at any time?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, maybe the vote would be that we have to at least have some reason to suspect that she's pregnant, maybe, but not yet Hukka Ubra. Hukka Ubra, we talked about in Yevamos, is 3 months since the pregnancy.
Obvious, yeah.
But before that, even before Hukka Ubra, even before she starts showing, she herself knows she's pregnant. She's not having periods, for example. So we could be talking about a stage like that. The Ikadamri, or another version of this whole discussion, goes as follows. Amar Rabba, Loy Amar Rabba, Loz Ben Yaakov, Ela B'Shachas Be Kirsha. According to the second version, Rabba is further qualifying. It's not just that according to Loz Ben Yaakov, it has to be at the Shachas stage to be able to say that it's Truma, that it will eventually be Truma. It has to be Shachas from, this goes more to what you were saying about whether it's going to end up growing to the one-third stage or not. If it's Shachas of a field that's watered by rainfall, well then, it's reasonable to assume that it will eventually grow to the full size. Because you can assume that under normal circumstances, rain will fall. But it's in a Beis Shakya, it's in land that has to be artificially watered, where therefore, if you don't water it enough, it's not going to continue growing, and it's very likely that it's not going to reach that stage, loy, then even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would not say that you could do that. And then in the second version, Rabbi Yosef says, I agree it has to be Shachas, but I don't care whether it's Beit Kibsha or Beit Shakya. As long as it's Shachas, that's good enough. But not like in the previous version where he said, even if it's at the Agam stage, that's already enough. No, in the second version, he says it does have to be at the Shachas stage.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, so now we can ask Taman Ozla Hodatanya. So now we can ask, according to who does it go, this that we learned in the Braiser, actually in our Mishnah. And that Rav Chanina says on that, Loshanu Alashain Ishtoi Moberes, Aval Ishtoi Moberes Dvar Chayomin. Kaman, so who would that go according to? This statement of Rav Chanina, we could say, Kshahuka Ubra, we could say that he is talking about only after the baby is recognizable, meaning only after she already starts showing, 3 months into the pregnancy. The divra hakol, and then everybody would agree to that. It wouldn't just have to be according to Rabba or Rabbi Yosef. Both of them would agree to that since in the case of plants, they're distinguishing between Beit Kivsha and Beit Shakya, because you have the distinction whether a field that needs watering or a field that doesn't need watering. With a pregnant woman, that sort of thing is not relevant. You generally speaking, you can assume most women who are pregnant are going to, actually, it's more like Shachas to Beit Kivsha. The whole thing is Bidei Shemayim. It's in the Eved's hands whether she's going to have a baby. Fine, that's the same thing as Beit Kivsha, where Rava says that's good enough. Same thing according to that would be good enough. Amar Abaya, so Abaya says, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, v'Rebbe, v'Rav Meir, kulu svira lahu adam makna davar shalai balo. They all hold that a person is able to be makna something that does not fully exist in the world. Yeah. Now, we've mentioned in a few places that a number of Rishonim take the rule that ein halacha kashita, that when the Gemara tells us that there's a number of Tanoim who hold the same opinion, that is as much as to say the halacha is not like that. That the halacha is like all the other chachamim who disagree with them.
Wow.
Yes. Here actually, it is true that many Rishonim say that the halacha is not like them. On the other hand, one of the ones over here is Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, and we have the usual rule, Mishnah Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Kav Benoch, that we usually say, we learned this in Yevamos, that Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, there's relatively few places in Gemara where he speaks up, and in Mishnah, or in the Mishnah of Brises, or whatever, where he speaks up, but when he gives his opinion, but when he does, the halacha is like him. So in that case, then the halacha ought to be like him. Rashi, in fact, says that way. Rashi says that's why Rabba and Rabbi Yosef were going to the trouble of explaining what Rav Elazar ben Yaakov's shitta is, because they hold the halacha is like him. But again, many other Rishonim disagree with that. Tosfos actually discusses that not necessarily, because you could draw a certain distinction, the Gemara is going to quote the cases where Rebbe and Reb Meir say cases that they can be machna davar shalai ba'olam. We could make a certain distinction between those and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion, and therefore we don't necessarily, even though Abaya is saying they all hold the same thing, doesn't necessarily have to mean they all hold the identical thing. they all hold in the same general vicinity, but not necessarily that they hold identically in each of these cases that we're going to quote. That, and also Abaye is saying this, doesn't mean that Rabbah, for example, has to agree with it. That Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says the same thing as Rabbi Meir and as Rebbe. So therefore, if we go with Rabbah's understanding, for Rabbah's and Rabbi Yosef's understanding, then we could say the halacha could very well be like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Rabbi Meir and Rebbe have their own shita, which is different than his. So, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov ha'damor. In Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we see that he says, oh, the makna davar shalal ba'olam, we just said, because he says that even before the grain has grown to one-third, even when it's at the shachas stage, or according to the first version of Rabbi Yosef, even when it's in an earlier stage, you can already declare in advance that it will be truma when it grows to the right stage and when it's fixed. Rebbe, how do we see that Rebbe holds to that concept, the Tanya? We learn in a braisa, we learned this in Gittin. When the pasuk says, l'tzafki eved al adonav, the pasuk says you should not hand over an eved to his master, that his master should be able to use him as a slave. Rebbe Omer b'lekeach eved amanas l'shachar akos medaber. So Rebbe says, on the face of it, the pasuk is saying that if an eved runs away from his master, don't hand him back to his master. However, the Gemara, we learned in Gittin, the Gemara had we brought a couple of different understandings of that. L'chora, it can't only mean that, because after all, I mean, an eved is a property of his adon. You can't just say because he ran away therefore, I mean, for, you know, okay, I mean, you could argue on a certain logical basis, fine, if he ran away, it means his adon is obviously mistreating him, so don't return him to that situation, fine. But the Gemara, as a matter of halacha, does not assume that to be the case. The Gemara assumes, we learned about this, we had a whole story about this in Gittin, that it must be limited to a certain kind of case. So we talked about it, but there one possibility we said, there was a Manda Omer that said that we're talking about where an Eved ran away from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. We were saying that since he has this chutz of living now in Eretz Yisrael, then we don't want to make him go back to Chutz La'aretz, very appropriate for this time of year. And then we have, Rebbe Omer, v'lekeach Eved amanas l'shachra kosa b'davar. The pasuk is actually talking about a case where somebody buys an Eved on condition that he is going to be m'shachra him. That when he buys him, he says that when the thing is complete, I'm going to m'shachra you. Hey, Chidami, now how do you accomplish such a thing? I mean, obviously, if he freed him and now he wants to reuse him as an Eved, you can't say, l'shach your Eved al adon, other than implying that he's still an Eved. So how do you have such a thing? For example, he writes him a document that says, Liksha Ekachaka, when I buy you, which I haven't bought you yet, then you own yourself as of now. Meaning, in other words, he's saying, even though I haven't bought you yet, I don't have the ability to meshachar you right now, and therefore for me to do that would be a davar shalai b'olam, but I'm making the condition in advance that I'm buying you, and when I do, that the shichru will take effect. And we see Rebbe says such a thing is valid.
Buying you, the shichru takes effect.
So we see that. So
meaning, what, it's free automatically?
Yes, that's what we're saying. That's according to Rebbe. That's what the pasuk is saying. That you don't have the ability now to say, you know what, after all, I bought you. You're my Eved. And Beis Din is not allowed to hand them back to you. So therefore, we see that Rebbe holds all the machna davar shalai b'olam. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here. You can see there's a Tosfos over here that takes up almost the whole Amud, which talks about various details about this. First of all, there's the important point that he did say me'achshav, that he said that if this is taking effect as of now. If he hadn't said that, then it might not be effective. Which leads Tosfos into a long discussion about the pros and cons of that. Of whether you have to say ma'achshav or not,
Isn't that definitive?
Well, no, so that's the thing. Because, for example, we learned the other day the case of a man says to a woman that I'm makadosh you 30 days from now.
Right. And if he had
ma'achshav. But even if he didn't say ma'achshav, as long as nobody else was makadosh her during that time, we said at the end of the 30 days the condition will be in effect. So why should it be any different over here?
Because he said ma'achshav.
No, but if he didn't say it, that's the question. Why over here does he need to say ma'achshav and over there not?
Ah.
So that leads Tosfos to discuss that the difference is because after all kedushin are usually done by kesef, and after all, okay, you know, he gave her kesef, and that kesef may or may not exist, but fine, you know, the kinyan over here. Here, generally speaking, an eved is freed using a shtar. So therefore, you have to say ma'achshav, because otherwise, if the shtar gets ripped up during that time, then it may not be effective. Then, like I said, Tosafos continues to discuss a couple of other possibilities about the pros and cons of having the same ash or not.
If he has a shtar, why should he have the same ash? It's obvious.
He's freeing him with a shtar, but that's the point. You usually free an eved with a shtar. So he's saying, when I buy you, how to ask me for knoyos on a lamashik. And therefore, I'm giving you this shtar shichlu now. What happens if he only ends up buying him a month from now? And during that time, the shtar gets ripped. That might not be good, but if he said me'achshav, then it's fine, because since at the time he gave him the shtar, then yes. That's one thing Tosfos discusses. And like I said, it goes on to discuss the pros and cons of it a little more. And then one more, Rav Meir, where we see that Rav Meir holds that you can do Dabar Shalak Olaylam. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, similar to our Mishnah, Lachash Tizgayri, Lachash Tizgayri, Lachash Tachar, Lachash Tachari, Lachash Yomus Bailach, Lachash Tamas Achosa, Lachash Yach, Lachash Yomus, Eina Mekudeshes, so she's not Mekudesh, Rav Meir Oymer Mekudeshes. Rav Meir says she is Mekudesh, which shows that he holds that you can do Dabar Shalak Olaylam, because all those cases are that, yeah. The bride continues. Rabbi Yechon Asan lo ima ina mekudeshes. Rabbi Yechon Asan lo says she's not mekudesh. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi ima mekudeshes. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says she is mekudesh. Uma tam ro ima ina mekudeshes. So why did the Chachamim say she's not mekudesh? Mishum Eva, because there'll be friction involved. Not jealousy, but friction. Meaning, Rabbi says most of them lo achashes gairi, lo achashes gairi, etc. are fine. I agree with. The la'achas shetamos achoisech or la'achas shiyamos bailech, that I disagree. Because if you're going to say that, it's going to cause friction. The sister who's now married to him is going to say, what, you're looking forward to me dying? You're already patish my sister ahead of time before I'm dead? Yeah, same thing with the woman's husband. For those, Rebbe says, I disagree on those two. Okay. So the question is, v'nachshiv nami Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Fine, in that case, we have a fourth Tana. We seem to have a fourth Tana who says, oh, the machna dover shalab alevim, namely Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is Rabbi. It's two names for the same person. We already mentioned Rabbi in connection with the Eved. Yes, he's following his same opinion as far as the Kiddushin, that it works with the exception of the cases where there's Eva involved. One more, V'nechshav Nami Rabbi Akiva. Why don't we also count Rabbi Akiva, that he also holds, all the Machna Dover Shalai Bala Olam. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, we learn in Nedarim. Actually, we learned in Ksuvus as well. Koinam shani oisel l'ficha. If a woman says, I'm making a koinam that anything that I make should be also to your mouth, that all of my maisa yadayim should be also to you, ein sarich l'hafer. The husband does not have to be made for such a neder because she has a shibud to do work for him. Rav Akiva Omer Yofer. Rav Akiva says he does have to be made for Shemar Tadif all of Yosim and Aroila, because she may end up doing more extra beyond the statutory amount. We learned in Ksubas that there's a certain amount that she's expected to do. Any more than that, she would be entitled to keep. So therefore, Rav Akiva says he has to be made for the neder because, for example, what if she's supposed to make, for example, Rashi brings, let's say, for example, five tfloyim weight of shefi, and she makes six. So the sixth one, by right, she could give him anyway, and like this, the koinam could take effect on that. But the point is, it's not davar shalav olam. She hasn't made the sixth one yet, and yet Rabbi Akiva is saying such a neder has validity. The answer is, ho'it ma'alom, Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. Yes, but you know that it was said on that, but Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua explained, but Imeris, the case isn't where she said the ma'isi yodom, the ma'isi yodayim will be mekudesh. Those taka don't exist yet. But she says, yikdashu yodai lo yisayim. My hands should be mekudesh. Should be hektish to the Eivishter, to the one who made them. The Yadayim is Nubhalam, the hands exist. Therefore, such a neder would have validity. So it's only the Chachamim say, since she's Meshubah to him, then not, and Rav Akiva says, since there's a possibility of Oidif, of doing extra, then he has to do Hafara for that. But it's not a question of Dabash of Olam. We can still say Rav Akiva Taka holds that you cannot do a deal with Dabash of Olam.
That's an exception.
No, it's not an exception. It's just, it's not a case of davar shalav olam, because the hands already exist. It's the equivalent of saying that I'm makdish this tree, that the fruit of it should go to hektish. The tree exists now. The fruit doesn't yet.